Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Tuesday. So the week is almost over.
No, it is so not at all.
Welcome to the show. It's Election Day. As has been mentioned here on the station, we hope you get out and vote.
Did you vote yet? I have not voted after the show.
I'll vote after the show.
I'm pretty excited to vote today with Michael. He's never done it before. And he was worried about it yesterday. He goes, "What time are we voting? What should we do?
What should we wear?"
I'm like, "You have school.
Will there be corn dogs?" That's always a question that comes up. I hope there's corn dogs at the polling place.
Justin Kaufman was talking about his precinct and the elderly people that work there. I do love my precinct ladies. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, there's a younger guy who gets mm-hmm. thrown into the mix. Mm-hmm. But I just love them.
You love them because why?
It's just fun. It just reminds me of going with my mom to vote when she was younger. It's a different precinct,
yeah.
But still the ladies, I think, are the same.
Probably. It's a job for life.
It is.
It's like being the Pope.
And they put in such long days,
yeah,
like the Pope.
But there's usually, the one by me has Winchell's Donuts. I don't know how they swing that because I don't think Winchell's Donuts have been around for a long time. But I always see a box of Winchell's Donuts on their table. How long have these guys, have these donuts been here? Here's a question I don't know if you know the answer to, but feel free to guess. How much money do you think was spent by the people running for the Illinois governor race? What do you think the dollar amount is as of yesterday? This is a story from ABC News from last night where they tallied it up. What do you imagine?
I can't remember how much Pritzker spent, but it's a lot. Is he the top runner?
I'm almost positive he is.
So my guess, this is everyone?
Everybody involved in both.
$10 billion.
No, it's just under $10 billion. This is for the Democratic side and the Republican side together. They have, as of last night, spent a whopping total of $160 million for this election.
To me, I'm sorry. I know this sounds terrible, especially if you're running. Isn't this a waste of money?
In my opinion, yes. Because, seriously... The job doesn't pay. If the job paid more than that, then you go, well, you're going to make money. And I know you're not doing it for the money. You're doing it to hopefully, you know, advance the society and the culture. But is it worth that much money? And then I'm not the first person to pose this question. It's been posed many, many times. But couldn't that money be better spent in other ways?
Yeah, to help bail out the city that you allegedly love so much.
That's one of the ways. There's countless ways that money could be spent. And they've talked about in the past this thing where for every dollar you spend, you also have to give a dollar to some needy charity or something. I always like that idea. I always think, yeah, that seems fair. Then somebody's benefiting from that much money. But $160 million thus far has been spent by your candidates on both the Democratic and the Republican side to be our next governor.
I know that you see the commercials a lot.
Constantly.
And that's why I like today.
Constantly.
Because tomorrow will be okay.
Because it'll be the end, finally.
Until the next election. But, you know, I see the commercials. I take them all with a grain of salt. And don't you pretty much, for the most part, know who you're voting for before the barrage of commercials?
I wouldn't be... It could be the best commercial in the world or the worst, and it wouldn't sway me, because I don't believe them. When the commercial is on and they're saying, "Daniel Biss wants to kill your grandma," I go, "I don't know if he wants to kill my grandma." He might, but I don't think he does.
I know. I don't agree. It's just a bunch of crap.
And when I asked him, we had him on, he was very vague about it. "Do you want to kill my grandmother?" Well, you know, we'll see what happens with her.
I'm torn in the governmental race, the primary. I'm a little torn here as to what to do. And
But you wouldn't be swayed if you saw a commercial that said something.
No, not a commercial. It's just doing my own research.
Yeah.
That's what will sway me. And if I met them. We've talked about this off
the
air.
Right. All right, my wife is in a situation where she teaches improv at retirement centers. And at one of the retirement centers, they were not going to vote for a specific candidate. Most of them were not going to vote. One out of 16 was going to vote for a specific candidate. And then that candidate came and spoke at that retirement center. And then all of a sudden, 15 out of the 16 were going to vote for that particular candidate. And I thought to myself, well, mission accomplished. They did exactly what they wanted to do. They went and met the people and convinced the people that they were the right candidate. But for some reason, I don't work that way. Just because I meet somebody, I don't say, "Yeah, that's definitely the guy or the girl for me."
Oh, I think that's huge.
I
think it's a big part. I mean, I remember local candidates around here Maria Pappas was one. I don't know that she does it so much, but early on when she was running for office, she was just out everywhere shaking people's hands. And there was a Wisconsin senator, longtime senator, William Proxmire.
I remember him.
Sure, in the 80s and 70s.
Yeah.
I don't.
And he was really tough on government spending and stuff, and he would spend almost no money on his campaigns. He would just be out
meeting people
and shaking people's hands. And I lived in Wisconsin at the time, and I'd, you know, I'd go out for breakfast, and I'd shake Proxmire's hand, or I'd go to a basketball game, and there's Proxmire
but
again.
Steve, what does that say? Like, why would that automatically win somebody over just to see them in person? You know?
Well, I think there's a humility in it, especially if you're just standing on a corner greeting people.
Yeah.
It's a connection.
It's a human connection more so than a TV commercial.
Seriously, Bill, I know you laugh at me, and not because I'm funny. You laugh at the things I do in life a lot.
Yeah, sometimes.
If I were to meet someone and shake their hand, and I met Daniel Biss, and I am... I like nice people. So if somebody is nice to me, I'll go, God, that Daniel Biss is a nice guy. I'm not 100% convinced, but I'm going to do a little more research and decide. But I didn't meet Chris Kennedy.
But you have to know, and I'm not saying this against Daniel, because I don't believe that this is what he's doing, but any candidate who's out meeting people is going to be on his or her absolute best behavior. It's going to be all smiles from start to finish. So you would still be swayed just from physically seeing them and meeting them?
Yeah, and I don't think I'm alone. As Steve said, I think it's a very common thing. It's just it shows you they're a real person, and wow, I shook his hand, and he was really cool. And
I mean, Bill, what sways you then? I mean,
nothing.
No, track record sways me, and
but where are you learning about the track record?
I'm trying to read as much as I can about the candidates.
I mean, because I think a handshake is more valuable than a commercial.
Commercials don't work.
100% true. Yeah.
You're right. I don't believe
a handshake over a commercial any day of the week. But when their job is to just say awful, awful things about everybody they're running against, and, you know, John Williams has done a very good job of having a lot of the candidates on to dispel what's being said about them in the commercials, and then they just pile up because they're so fake and false, you know. All the allegations that are made are just fake.
And I don't think, like, if I was completely set on a candidate and all of a sudden I shook someone's hand and then, oh, that's it, I'm going to do it. But if I was undecided, which I kind of am right now.
That would win you over.
It kind of might.
Interesting.
I like the human connection. To me, that means a lot, and stupid. But
I know that that's an important aspect of it. There's no doubt about it. That's an important element, but it would never be a tip-in for me. Just people go, yeah, we were at a rally, and then he showed up, and I'm like, oh, that's my guy. I need so much more than that.
But if you were kind of deciding between two and you met that person, that might push you over. It's not going to completely change your whole thing.
I don't think if the guy was for torture and you shook his hand, you'd be for him.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Right. You have to like him to begin with. But then to meet them in person would really tip it in for me. That really would make a difference. And we talk about this every election. Like, why would that matter? It does to me. It mattered to the people at the center.
I think it probably matters to more people than not. I really do.
When do you vote for someone because they're nice? No, that's not what I'm saying. But everybody likes a nice person. And if I'm leaning towards voting for them and I meet them in person and they're nice, that might tip it in.
But
absolutely.
In the past, you voted for Mr. Rogers.
Yes.
For Will Rogers. For anyone named Rogers. That's kind of weird. All right, let's do this. And if you want to chime in, we would love to hear from you. Does that sway your vote?
I didn't vote for Aaron Rodgers.
You should have voted for Aaron Rodgers. He's fantastic. 312-981-7200. That's the way to get to us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
What is Steve Cochran doing? MAVA, Make America Vote Again?
Yeah, that's his cause.
Voting time.
You made me tear up. Or maybe I just have allergies. I'm not sure. Either way, today
is
election day. Happy spring, everybody. Here's the question that we posed. And Cheryl, we will go to you because we know that you agree with Wendy. And that's cool. Would you be swayed just from meeting a candidate? Would that be enough to win you over? Would it, huh?
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
Good. Bill's wondering, this would be enough to sway your decision, meeting the person?
Well, I just wanted to tell, I worked for a big company on the North Shore, and my boss was the head of government affairs, and so years ago, he hosted Mark Kirk. I had no intention of voting for Mark Kirk, But anybody who's nice to a secretary, because, you know, they treat the secretaries like, you know, they're necessary evil. He was, I had to go pick him up and, you know, walk him around the building. He was so genuinely nice to me. And Bill could be right. It could just be putting on your best performance, you know, your best behavior. But he was very, very nice. And I really liked the way he talked to our group. And particularly the way he treated me. And that was enough to sway me.
He is, to his credit, he's an incredibly nice man. But to me, because those jobs are so important, if you're running for some political office, I don't think nice is enough. You know, I want the right man or woman for the job. I don't just want them to be nice.
Yeah, but I liked what he said too, Bill. When he
That does matter when they say something. Again, it's not going to make me switch parties or switch candidates completely.
Right.
But if I'm kind of torn between two and I meet one of them, that might push it over the edge for me.
Right.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl. Appreciate it.
Have you voted already?
I have not yet. I am going to go later on.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Right now, all the candidates running for governor are racing to Cheryl's house to quickly meet her.
Shake your hand.
Before she heads out to the polls.
Dems, according to 847, Dems, oh boy, I got to shake a hand. I'm voting for you. That isn't what I'm saying. Where's Bertrand to help back me up? It's not going to completely change my mind, but again, if I'm torn between two candidates, which I kind of am right now, and I meet someone, it's going to be in the back of my mind. It might sway my decision.
See, I used to think that that was a tactic that worked decades ago when the world
pressing
wasn't
the flesh.
I really thought that that was the thing that...
Isn't that what all those whistle stop tours were?
If it didn't work, people wouldn't still be doing
it. No, but I'm saying, Steve, that as we've become more like global savvy because of the internet and stuff like that, that just the mere fact of seeing somebody running for office, that wouldn't budge us anymore. But it does, I guess.
What if a candidate waves to you on Facebook? And what does that mean when someone waves to you or pokes you? I don't know.
What was the one of the criticisms of Hillary Clinton was that she didn't spend enough time in Wisconsin.
I know.
She wasn't warm either.
I know.
Well, that's... No, but Wendy, I'm trying to help you here.
I know.
That proves that's the point a little bit just extended. You know, people like to be presented with the candidates, whether it's in your home state or... on the corner.
And I didn't think she was warm. Perhaps if I met her and shook her hand, that would have swayed me. So it's important to meet them.
I know I've mentioned this before, but there was a guy, and Steve, you'll have to help me out with what job he held, but Ed Derwinski, was he a congressman?
Yeah, Derwinski was a congressman, I believe,
So every 4 years, he would come to our school and speak at our school. Ed Derwinski would speak to a bunch of grade school
Did
kids.
They care?
Well... Yes, the kids were so wowed by it because
really?
he was a big important government guy.
He's a member of Congress.
Yeah, I guess.
So, Wendy, show respect.
So not only did they care, but when it was over, they would line up and get his autograph, and Mr. Derwinski would speak about things that most third graders weren't really that up on anyway, but you know, we would all sit there, and it was a congressman. And then at the end, he would really, really make this clear. Make sure you tell your moms and dads when you get home that Congressman Ed Derwinski was there and you met him.
And he was very nice to you, boys and girls, and he brought you cookies.
Yeah.
That would have worked.
A few of those third graders probably were old enough to vote by the time.
There were a couple. But like even as a kid, I'm like, oh, that's the game. You know, you plant it in your kids' heads, go home, tell your moms and dads. And I'm sure they did. And that probably translated into votes. It was a good move for him, I guess.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right. I know we have to go, but Joe, you got 30 seconds here. Go ahead.
Hi, Wendy. I kind of agree with you a little bit. Sometimes when you meet someone, you can tell if they're lying or if they're genuine. And if you actually get a chance to talk to them, you just ask them questions about what the issues are, and you can see how they're going to answer them. I mean, you can tell by seeing somebody whether you'd want to vote for them or not.
Has it ever happened to you, Joe? Have you met a candidate and said, yeah, that's my guy or girl or not?
Well, I didn't meet them, but a lot of the, you know, actually I've been a Democrat my entire life just about, and I voted for Rauner because I couldn't stand Pat Quinn.
Yeah.
And Pat Quinn, I did meet him once. He just seems to talk out of the side of his face a lot.
Oh.
And I just think that you can tell if you legitimately talk to somebody.
Hey, I met Rod Blagojevich and loved him. Sorry, I did as a person. I really did. Yeah. And I loved Patty too, his wife.
Are you going to vote for him today?
No.
Probably not. Mm-mm. Don't do it. All right.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news. There's a lot going on today's show, including Lisa Goranson and Bruce Helford. They're from Roseanne. Roseanne is coming back.
I can't wait. My favorite show. I watched the very first episode all these many years ago when it debuted, and I pretty much watched it. I did watch it till the end.
It'll be fun to talk to them there at 11:05, but all kinds of stuff in between. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It is a Tech Tuesday. It is the first day of spring. I always thought the first day of spring was March 21st.
Yeah. It's
vernal equinox.
Oh, yeah. Elvis is dead. it's now. It's today.
All right. Happy spring. Well, it's not even really that sunny blue sky, is
it? It's coming, though.
All right.
11:15.
Steve says it'll be here at 11:15, Wendy. Be patient.
All right.
The vernal equinox.
Oh.
Hello, Lavernal Equinox. You set me up for that. You just wanted
beautiful.
Me to do that.
Well done.
It is a Tech Tuesday. We're going to talk to Bridget Carey from CNET momentarily, in a couple of minutes, actually. And I don't know if you guys have a Fitbit. Do you? You
do
should
not.
Get a Fitbit.
Why? How come?
I guess you don't care about anything. You just...
That's the worst thing you've ever said.
Well,
you don't care about anything. Why would
If I may specify...
Take 30 seconds to dispute.
It just, like, there's the health thing on your iPhone, and it tells you how many steps you've taken in the day, but I don't know how true that is, because there were days that I go to the rec center and... I add much more than other days, and it's the same.
Yeah, I don't know that it's accurate. And then
put it down when I'm on the elliptical. I don't hold it in my hand.
I think it depends on how you wear it or something. But one of the things I do to exercise is it's really, I just walk up and down stairs.
Yeah. Right, and it says how many flights you've done.
And it's very accurate.
Is it really?
Yeah, because I go up and down. That's how I keep count, and I watch. And I read about it. It actually changes, it measures changes in barometric pressure. So that's how it figures
within
out.
Within your body?
I think...
How would it...
I'm stumped.
Well, it would have to be within your body.
This is a good question. So it's a barometer. Is there a barometer on my wrist now? I don't know.
There's everything. It keeps track of your pulse. And you play tennis.
Right.
It just seems like, you know, your heart rate. It just seems like something that you'd be into. Plus, it's a watch.
But I wouldn't do... And you know me, Wendy. I don't care about anything.
I didn't mean it that way. Do you care what your heart rate's at? Do you care how many steps you've taken?
Be honest. No.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't do anything differently.
I know.
Once I know
I
wouldn't do more or less of anything.
So that I spoke very generally, and I shouldn't have, but I knew you wouldn't care about this.
Yeah, because I don't know how that translates into important information for me.
Some people like to get 10,000 steps in a day, and they won't stop. Like, they'll take the dog for 10 walks until they get those 10,000.
Right. My daughter Kylie, we were in line once to see a movie, and she kept pacing back and forth. And I said, "Are you worried we're not going to get to the?" And she goes, "No, but I need 3,000 more steps before the day is over." But it looked like she had to go to the bathroom or something, because she just kept walking around in a circle.
All right, so that's what I'm saying when I say you don't care about anything.
Yeah.
You do care about many things, but this is something I can't.
Yeah.
At first, I thought, "Oh, you're the perfect person," but you're really not.
They make a thing you can put on your tennis racket that tells you within a match or a game how many strokes you took or you know, just backhands you took. And then I'm like, well, what do I do with that? Once I know that, I won't change it. I won't do anything differently.
You just do not embrace technology in any way, shape, or form, do you?
Technology and I do not get along.
Well, good. I'm glad we're going to talk to Bridget Carey. But if you have a Fitbit, they're adding a new tracking item. Like, not only can you track how many flights of stairs you go up, like Bertrand does, how many steps you take, but you can also now track your menstrual cycle.
Oh, well, then now I'll get one.
I've been doing that for months now.
You do it privately, though.
No, it's on my Fitbit. It's an app.
It's kind of important to keep track of that. I don't get mine anymore because I'm old. But I was thinking back as I looked at this.
Did you update the software?
It's hardware now.
Yes, it is.
When I was younger...
I'm not hungry anymore, by the way. I was really hungry for a while.
It's gone, isn't it?
It's gone.
See, that's
babies.
The magic of the Fitbit.
Yep.
That's what it does.
It helps you with your appetite.
How does that change your appetite?
I don't know how. Not hungry.
But when I was younger, I became a woman very young. I was 10 years old. That's pretty young.
Go ahead, tell the story.
And so you'd have to keep track of it just so you could plan on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you knew when to be prepared for it, I guess. Well, plus, then later in life, you'd want to find out if you missed a period, maybe you were pregnant.
I bet for people who want to have children, this is probably a very important
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's totally different
now. If you're planning
now.
A family, this is essential.
So Fitbit's first smartwatch had its fair share of issues, but now they have added the menstrual cycle tracking to its smartwatches.
Bill, I slept for 7 hours and 53 minutes last night, but I was awake for an hour and 2 minutes.
Wait, it tells you how wow. you did that?
Mine does.
That's pretty cool.
Do you have a Fitbit, or you're just using the health thing?
No,
on
it's
your...
a Fit. It's one of. It's not the basic Fitbit. It's the one step. It's Onyx or Orbal or something.
So you can ride a life cycle and your menstrual cycle at the exact same time. What a glorious time we live in, Wendy.
See, you act like you're offended about talking about a menstrual cycle, and you just did for a funny guy joke.
I just don't care anymore.
Stop it.
When did that change?
It didn't change.
I just think it's a good idea. 80% of women did not know how many phases are in a menstrual cycle. I don't. Is it a joke? How many phases are in your menstrual cycle? Wow. More than 70% were unable to correctly identify the average length of a cycle. I believe it's 28 days. Why am I asking
sounds
you?
Sounds right.
So it demonstrates a lack of awareness.
It probably varies.
It does vary, it but anywhere vary. Between like 26 and 31
yeah,
is normal.
So anyway, Bridget Carey's coming up?
Yeah, she'll be on later, Steve.
Okay.
She'll be on soon. Unless she's listening.
Why?
I don't
my
know.
God. It's like working with a couple of 12-year-olds.
I love
yeah,
this, Wendy.
You knew that, though, coming into it.
How about it, Mary? I mean, didn't you used to track your periods?
Well, yeah, you had to, so you didn't, you know.
You had to plan vacations
plan
elsewhere?
Pregnant or
you know,
something?
I was awake for an hour and 2 minutes, and during that hour and 2 minutes, I never thought we'd be talking
yeah,
about this
care.
Today.
Me neither.
It's so nice to work with adults, Mary, isn't it?
My Fitbit just died. That's not a good sign.
No.
The battery just died.
Get the paddles.
Right. All right. How about this? A quick break, and then Bridget Carey might join us. We'll see. It's Bill
Why
and Wendy
would she
WJ.
Not?
She's coming on. I don't
God.
Care. I don't care.
Bunch of babies. Oh, yeah. It's a Tech Tuesday, and CNET senior editor Bridget Carey is with us. Bridget, very briefly before you called, we were talking about Fitbit now has a different thing you can track, which is your menstrual cycle, and I think that's very important. And working with boys, they were laughing and giggling and acting like babies.
Because we were uncomfortable, Bridget, that's why.
I know. Yeah, you know... It's important for people to be knowledgeable about this stuff. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm kind of on both sides of the fence here because it's just a personal matter, right? I think it's good to have the tool at your disposal, but then we're in an age where you're giving some real personal info to some company on the other side, especially in this era of hearing how much data is leaked and breached. I just don't need information about my breaches being breached. That's all.
Good point.
So when I was trying to have a baby, I actually did dive into one of these apps that you know helps track your cycle, and I found it to be helpful. But then after a while, I was like, but someone's got this info on me out there, and I felt kind of funny about it a little. So, because I know everything at the end, how do these apps make money? It's advertising. But with Fitbit, at least, they're making money on the product, right? They're making money on the actual thing you're buying. So they're less incentivized to sell that data or share it, whereas a free app you get on the App Store could be using it more for advertising.
All right. Now, speaking of giving people's privacy to other people, what's going on with Facebook?
Oh, what a mess. I think after with all this Cambridge Analytica stuff, it's just another reminder of how, you know, a company can only protect so much and say that they care about your data so much. But
now, for people who don't know, this is a data firm, this Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah, and the real short explanation is when you want to use a third-party app, sometimes it'd be like Facebook would like permission to like get your email to connect with this app. So this one guy, he's like a researcher in the UK, he made an app that connected with Facebook, and you had to agree to give it access to not just your profile, but you had to agree to give it access to your friends' profiles. It was a very wide-ranging access point. And so several thousand people who used it also were able to have the app collect info on their friends and it became like 50 million people. And that person sold that info to analytics group Cambridge Analytica. So Facebook's saying, whoa, this got out of hand. But just know what's possible. I mean, if just the fact that an app maker can access that on their own and then maybe didn't follow the rules and sold it to someone, and then Facebook, you know, the whole reason it blew up even more in this story is that Facebook, this happened 3 years ago, Facebook says, well, we told Cambridge Analytica to delete it, and they proved it, and now the Times says, well, actually, they didn't delete all the data, and so it's being used to manipulate you, and it's just another reminder that, you know, all this is out there, and people are now talking. I think the conversation today has been hashtag delete Facebook. People are searching for what they can do to delete Facebook, if they really can, like, live a normal life without it, because, I mean, not to be cheeky, we use it to contact so many people. I don't know phone numbers. I know that I can reach someone on Facebook. So there's that fine line of like, well, maybe I don't need to give everything anymore. I should go through my settings. I should stop advertisers from tracking me, but maybe you keep it on a light basis, just to make sure you can keep in touch with people, you know, as you change phone numbers in life.
Bridget, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm one of those people who believes that this sort of thing goes on constantly, all day, every day. Don't you kind of?
Yeah, I kind of do. I mean, at least what you don't realize is how many groups Facebook partners with to build profiles of you. And so, okay, an analyst, a researcher was able to get access this way. So who else doesn't? I mean, people love interacting with silly little quiz games, right? You know, we're all a sucker for these, like, personality tests.
Or I'm Italian, so I take only a true Italian would get 10 out of 10, and I have to do it just to prove to myself I can, and they're super easy.
But now they're sending you coupons to Italy every 5 minutes.
I'll take them.
It's connected.
But you have to go to their, I mean, it's not just, oh, click on this link and take the little quiz. You have to give your access permission to your account.
And I think a lot of people went, oh, so I got those Italy coupons, big whoop. So they have my information, I get more coupons, who cares? But I think this was an example of how, no, they're actually harvesting a profile of you to, you know, try to, you know, have a campaign, you know, manipulate your mind. And it's always getting a little creepy, like, wait a minute, what do you mean my emotions can be manipulated? You know, you don't like thinking that way. Sure, advertisers love doing that, right? They love having profiles of you. But it's another reminder of how much data all these apps are collecting to kind of build this persona of you.
Yeah.
I have a text, and I don't know if it's accurate because sometimes people pull the wool over my eyes, but what about the information that the British company gathered and then passed along to the Trump administration for them to try and manipulate voters in his favor?
Well, yeah, Cambridge Analytica, a lot of Donald Trump's campaign was working with that firm, Steve Bannon.
Oh.
Advisor. He actually worked on Cambridge Analytica. A couple other people in Trump's campaign actually were donors to Cambridge Analytica. So there was this idea that, like, data is the key to changing politics, and they were all on board with this idea. Now, the White House says, at least they told CBS News, the Trump campaign didn't use Cambridge Analytica for the main campaign, the main election, but they did use it for the primaries. So take that what you will, you know.
What's Zuckerberg saying about this?
We have banned them. It's gross misuse. We're going to keep investigating. I mean, that Zuckerberg hasn't said much, but this is like what you're hearing from Facebook. You know, investigating gross misuse. They banned there was a whistleblower who was working at Cambridge, and you know they banned his Facebook account. Like what? Like this is kind of nonsense. I don't think they know what to do with themselves. I think they're in this cycle of bad news. They're in a cycle of how they really have acted all this time like they're in control, but they keep showing they're out of control. They don't even understand how their own algorithms are being manipulated, and I don't know how they're going to get out of this bad cycle when you have people right now going hashtag delete Facebook, and there's all these, you know, posts being written about how you can, you know, cut yourself free from Facebook. That's not going to be good for them.
Bridget, is this one of those situations where the technology is so new that there's really no laws to govern it? I'm sure some lawyer has said, where exactly does it say that what we did or potentially have done was illegal?
Oh, yeah. You know, there are some, I mean, at least in the UK, they have a lot more rules on, like, data collection than we do, and privacy rights. But this is a discussion now happening more and more with our government on should there be regulation on Facebook. So I think big moments like this are the catalyst to having your senator and congresspeople, you know, kind of talking about how they should be, you know, dealing with quote-unquote big tech, just like we dealt with big railroad.
All right. And there's I just lost my dog, Tiki, about a week and a half ago, and I'm very upset. But I guess I can get a robot dog now.
Oh,
not as cute.
Have you seen this picture that Bezos, Jeff Bezos from Amazon, is posting? Yeah. So there's this robot, I guess, conference that Amazon hosts.
Bill, you would have a dog like this.
Yeah,
come
a robot
on.
Dog. I'd love to have a robot dog.
It looks like something from Star Wars.
Right.
It totally does.
Yeah, Boston Dynamics makes a lot of crazy things that are now even in sci-fi. You know, there was that Black Mirror episode where like a robot dog was, it all went wrong. And then this robot that has been making the rounds with Jeff Bezos' photo, I believe it could open a door too. So it's kind of like, you know, like Jurassic Park, you don't have to worry until they start opening doors. But now, I think it's interesting to show how these robots can rescue and get in and out of places.
And can get you a beer out of the fridge. That's what I'm working on.
Yeah, there you go. Keep it positive.
Bridget, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
That's Bridget Carey, everybody, from CNET. Visit them online at CNET.com.
And this is sponsored by Illinois Tech Stewart School of Business. Yeah. All right. I'm going to do my Roseanne
do
stuff because I'm
get
either.
It out.
I feel like I'm either Liberace or Roseanne Barr.
One or the other. The Connors are coming back.
I can't wait.
America's Favorite Family is coming back. Bruce Helford, the executive producer of Roseanne, is here. Lisa Goranson, who was the first Becky on Roseanne.
And only. What's up, Chi-Town?
How are you? Good to see you guys. Yeah. Good to see you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be home.
We are excited.
We're so excited. Everyone's excited. It's we need the Connors in our lives.
Yeah, everyone needs Connors in their lives right now.
All right, so go back in time. When Roseanne ended, as you know, it ended a very specific way. We were told things about the future of the Connor family, but now the show's coming back, so you have to kind of double back on some of those facts, right?
Oh, it was all a dream.
It was all a dream.
Actually, part of it was a dream. When you watch the first episode, we actually do address everything carefully because it was very important to Rosie that we covered a lot of stuff. I don't want to give it away because you want to watch and see,
mm-hmm.
but obviously Dan's alive.
Good.
But we do cover. It wasn't just like we didn't just ignore everything.
So I cried for nothing.
Huh?
I cried for nothing when Dan died.
Nothing. Crying is such a wonderful thing, anyway. But it was. You'll see. We cover everything. We even cover Jerry Garcia, who a lot of people don't remember was the new Connor baby.
Yeah, right. So, that's right.
I know. It's like
I forgot.
He is also the lead singer of the Grateful Dead. In case
that's
you guys
where that
forgot.
Name comes. What? From.
Really? He was
yeah. yeah.
Coincidence. Wow, I didn't know he was. That's what he went out to do. but we actually cover that. We cover a lot of the things that were. But
did
also
they win
the lottery?
Did the Connors win the lottery, or did they not win?
That
the lottery?
Was a dream. That was a dream. That was clearly established in the when she woke up from the dream and she talked about having written the book and mm-hmm. all that. But that was a dream. They never had money. They never will have money. They're going to be struggling
right.
forever.
What year did that debut?
88, I think, was when it first came on.
October 18th.
Look at you.
1988.
I wouldn't know. I'm too
wow.
old.
I am telling
wow.
you, I fell in love with that show. I was always a big fan of Roseanne Barr, and that was kind of, I thought, the coolest family. That was the mom I want to be, and sadly, I became a mom like that.
I think it's great that you did.
Why did you leave? You, everything was going right, and then you were no longer a part of the show. What happened there?
Well, once Bruce came on,
that was
I wasn't really interested in sticking around.
Literally, we did two shows
around,
together,
you know
and she
what
left.
I mean?
I don't know what I said.
No, it was, you know, I kind of, as a lot of you viewers probably know, I'm from Evanston, and I had this wonderful life in Evanston that was cut short almost by my sudden
Your
rise
fame.
To fame,
yeah.
you know, whatever. But, you know, I had a lot of interests other than acting. I loved being in school. I was a dancer. I'm kind of a jock. I was playing soccer. And I just wanted to kind of nurture the other aspects of myself that were kind of put on hold. And I wanted to be around my peer group again. I was around a lot of loving, nurturing adults. But, you know, it's kind of hard to find a boyfriend and stuff.
Oh, I bet.
And, you know, kind of. I also
did you find
to,
one?
I found many. Many.
They found you.
Oh, good.
They found me.
Lisa, but, didn't you, during the show, like when you guys were on break, you were like a camp counselor, right? Like in between breaks on the show?
I was Camp Echo in Fremont, Michigan. I would go every summer. And when I graduated from being a camper, I just went up the ranks until I was a counselor. And I also taught Commedia dell'arte at Piven Theater Workshop over the summer. So I was
what
always
is that?
Back at
I'm
home.
I'm sorry, I don't know what that is.
It's an Italian art form. There used to be a theater company here called New Crime, which was started by like John Cusack and Paul Quinn. And they went over, I don't know where, maybe somewhere in Italy, and learned this art form from them, which is a contemporary version of Commedia. But it's basically stock characters,
big
like Harlequino and whatever. And it's just a really, really fun and liberating theater technique to learn. And so that's, you know, I was either in the woods in Michigan or I was at the theater, but I was always around here jumping in the lake or probably doing something stupid.
How accommodating was the show? Like when you decided after a couple years, I think I want to come back. Like a lot of shows would go, no, those days are over. Thanks, but no thanks. But they welcomed you with open arms. That says a lot.
And wrote it in funny ways.
It actually wasn't me that asked to come back. It was them courting me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was very much entrenched in my college education at the time. And, you know, I was doing a lot of theater and my senior thesis and what have you. And so I said, well, if we can work around my college schedule, then let's do this. And then it became tricky because then it, you know, I had 3 15-page English papers due on Monday. Jeez. And they said, do you want to go to Disneyland or something, or Disney World at the weekend? And I said, okay, guys, this isn't working out. I really have a priority here, which is graduating from college. So
you are the exact opposite of most people who land on this really popular show. I'd be like, to heck with school.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are, and it, you know, I feel
good
like
for
it's,
you.
It's really important, I think, for a young actor to realize that being an actor is someone who's also a well-rounded person.
Sure.
Because if you want to play different characters, you're pretty much at a loss if you're a one-trick pony and you're not exploring life. And so I really encourage, I'm, you know, probably blue in the face, no one listens to me, but I really encourage young actors to really fulfill as much education and aspects of themselves as they can so they can bring it to the work.
Yeah. It's like Rumspringa. I mean, they have to go away and be real people for a while.
Yeah.
And it
then
makes
they,
sense,
and then
though.
Come back to it. Yeah, I think it's always a huge dilemma for child actors, and I've watched it happen so many times, where they invest everything in the acting career, and you don't, the truth of it is, how many times do you get a hit show? How many times has it ever happened to you? You've got to be prepared for
right.
the rest of your life,
yeah.
and they don't, and those kids end up very unhappy. Well, I was really sorry to see Lisa go, because I literally just got there in 2 episodes. I had to send her on her way to go get married to Glenn Quinn.
Yeah. Well, what about that big party I heard you have?
Yeah, we had a huge party, actually. We were really
not, you're not there anymore.
Oh my God, she's gone. The witch is dead. It was really all that stuff. Yeah.
You know what the show did that I thought was such a funny inside thing was there was a scene where after you had left and Sarah Chalk replaced you, the family was watching an episode of Bewitched, and they talk about how they switched Darren's and nobody noticed in the family. I thought that was very funny.
There was lots of justifications for Trevor bringing that in. For me, it was always difficult. I love Sarah, but the thing is, in a show that naturalistic, I understand why they wanted Lisa to come back. It's just there's breaking that reality is tough, because that show is very real, not like most sitcoms. So.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Glenn Quinn no longer with us. Is he the only one not coming back for the reboot, the revival here?
Yes, and for good reason. He can't come back, but he's not. Yeah, we miss him. And there's a nod to Glenn and mention and a little thing for him. But
and we very much felt his presence very strongly. His family came from Ireland to see the show. And we had a picture of him backstage, and even people, some of the newbies on the crew, really kind of intuited his energy and presence. We all did, and it was really one of the many, many blessings of being back together is feeling his presence again.
That's really sweet. Roseanne Revival will appear ABC Tuesday, March 27th, this coming Tuesday. I can't wait. 7:00 Central Time. But you guys are in town for the 54th Chicago International Television Festival, and that's happening tonight, and the premiere will be shown there?
They're actually going to show 2 episodes.
Wow!
And not even the first. It's going to be two of the first. So a lot of people have seen the first episode, critics and things like that. But these episodes have not been seen. And people, it's going to be really interesting to see how people react. It's a radical show. We really tackled a lot of stuff. And as was with the old days, not afraid to make people uncomfortable. So it's going to be
That's why it works, though. It really did.
What do you call it? That's Rosie. That's what she
loved
wanted.
Her.
That's what she
Still
wanted.
Still do.
Yeah. Wendy and I have talked about this without you guys being here, but you're here, so why not bring it up? Trump is kind of a polarizing figure, let's say. All right. Mm-hmm. So
what?
Rosie, no, it's truly. See, it's true.
Oh,
Donald Trump is a polarizing
where
figure.
Where have I been?
So I read it in the paper. So Roseanne, both in real life and on the show, is a pro-Trump person. Did anyone ever say, oh, you know what, we're trying to make people like us, this might not be a good time to pull this off?
No, because one of the things about the show is the reality would be you've got a struggling working class family, particularly a white working class family who
was lost in the mix.
Yeah, who have been struggling forever. They're looking for any rope out.
Yeah.
I mean, Roseanne's politics are her politics. She's certainly not a follow by the book. Of any, Roseanne doesn't follow anybody all the way.
Stop it, or I'll grab my crotch again and say.
She, what do you call it? I mean, obviously, she's one of the foremost fighters for women's rights.
Absolutely.
From the very beginning, and gay rights, and all those things.
But that's why we're surprised that she's
She doesn't
pro-Trump.
Seem like a Trump fan.
But
I
she
gotta
also
admit.
She also is a huge, I mean, her one of her primary causes is the working class.
Yeah.
And I think what we can say about the election is that there was a lot of middle America that felt disenfranchised.
Sure.
And
ditched.
And ditched.
Yeah.
And just plain old ditched. And I think that she, to Roseanne, that is her cause. Those are her people. And it's not just her fan base. It's people that she loves and supports. And I think that that's a big part of it.
The people who would love loose meat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those people.
The thing about Roseanne, the reason that show so beautifully portrayed that lifestyle is you see lots of TV shows about blue-collar people, but almost always written from some perspectives of somebody who hasn't lived it. You have to see working class as the nobility of the country, and then you get it. And so on that show, that's what it is. And also the discourse between, I mean, obviously, Rosie went one way. Jackie and Darlene were obviously going to go another way.
Right.
I'm not giving anything away. We start the first episode where Roseanne and Jackie haven't spoken for almost 2 years.
Oh, no.
Because of the election. And so we deal with that. So the discourse in the family, the show isn't a political show. It deals with everything as we go along. But in the first episode, we do get into it and what the discourse in the family is. Like, it's going on all over America. There's lots of families that get together and they don't even want to mention politics because they're afraid it's going to blow something up right in the middle of a lovely dinner.
I don't want to mention Tom Arnold, but does he have a cameo?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Surprising.
Nope, not at all.
I think I just threw up in my mouth.
Lucy Goranson is here. Bruce Helford is here. Roseanne is coming back to ABC. Woo! You can see them at the Chicago International Television Festival. That's tonight. Go to chicagofilmfestival.com for more information. We'll be back in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Very excited to see Roseanne. It's the Roseanne Revival, Roseanne Reboot. What are we calling it? Bruce Helford?
We call it a Revival.
Revival.
And by the way, here's a segue. Roseanne deals with a knee injury.
Oh.
I wanted to be her.
She had a real knee injury, and we had to address it because she had a limp.
After she votes for Trump,
yes.
Someone breaks her knee in a dark alleyway.
Was it Tanya Harding?
No. But she actually fell, and she fell in a park in San Francisco, I think it was, and like broke her knee, and people wouldn't help her up. They were all walking around going, oh, look, there's Roseanne. She's like on the ground.
Taking pictures of it, probably.
She's on the ground waiting for somebody to help. But it leads to a very important storyline in the show.
Oh, interesting.
I can't wait. Lisa Goranson, actress and executive producer Bruce Helford in the studio. You guys are in town for the 54th Chicago International Television Festival. It is going on March 20th through the 22nd. Is that true? 3 days?
Sure. Sounds good.
All right. But tonight there is a premiere of a couple of episodes of Roseanne. We were talking briefly off the air and I wanted to bring it on the air. Bill, you asked if people kept in touch within
the cast, the crew.
Yeah, sadly for me, I've been on the East Coast around New York City for 20 years, and so everyone else has been on the West Coast. So, you know, save when Laurie Metcalf or John Goodman come around and do a play. But it's just for me, having an excuse to be out in LA and to be around these people that I spent so much of my life with has just been such a blessing. It's like the high school reunion everybody wants to have.
Yeah. Right.
John and Rosie stayed in touch all the time. They've been in touch throughout. But getting everybody on that stage and walking into that room, those rooms
must have been magical.
And it was crazy. And everybody was just, it was literally.
Was it emotional? Did you get weepy and stuff? Like,
I think it was more emotional over time. There were moments of just kind of reflection and just something like, you know, Sarah Gilbert and I spent every single day together, and we're actually the same age, you know, save 6 months or something like that. But, you know, I haven't been around her in years, and we just realized that, you know, we're sisters and we're so, so close. And, you know, who knows if we didn't have this opportunity, if we would remember. And now we talk all the time. We talk every week. And
good.
So it's just.
It was especially emotional when we finished the ninth episode. And I knew it was getting emotional because John Goodman, who really doesn't speak to anybody, he's a very quiet, private guy, started talking to me. And I'm like, okay, he's obviously feeling some separation anxiety here. We're actually talking.
I have to say something about you, Bruce. When I was a kid growing up, there was a guy named James Comeck, and he had this ability of finding stand-up comics and creating shows around him. He did it with Freddie Prinze. He did it with Gabe Kaplan. You've become our generation's James Comeck. You just have this uncanny knack of finding people and building hysterical shows around them.
I've been really lucky. I mean, Roseanne was my first big break. That was the first time I was allowed to run a show. I became the head writer and showrunner, and I hadn't done that yet. And so working with her is amazing. After that, it is true, because it's funny, because like Drew Carey, nobody thought, oh, he's never going to be a star. And George Lopez, I don't know about George Lopez. I mean, it was like, so I've been very fortunate.
And the funniest guy on the planet, Norm MacDonald.
And Norm MacDonald, of
course. Who's also one of our writers still.
Norm and Wanda Sykes are writing on the show.
Oh,
so, two of the funniest people.
Wow. Oh, the writing room is one of the, I mean, I have to say to my family, oh my God, I work so hard and I'm up so late. And we're like making jokes all night. I'm hiding the truth. If you'd heard that, kids, I'm really working hard. I don't mean that as a joke.
I'm looking so forward to this. What about new people? I have an 18-year-old son, and we saw the promos, and he's like, Mom, did you like Roseanne? I'm like, oh my God, I loved it. It was one of my favorite shows on TV. He's excited to watch it. He was like, we've got a DVR that's next week. Don't forget. Is there going to be a younger group of people that didn't see the first that will enjoy this, or is this?
Yeah, we were really careful to make it. We didn't take for granted that it'll all be viewers who have seen the show before. Although, like my kids too, they grew up on Nickelodeon, TV Land. They know the characters. And my daughter always said, it's so different, Dad. That just feels weird and different than other shows. Right. It's like real. It doesn't feel like.
Yeah.
So I think there's an attraction, first of all, to the reality and naturalism of it. I think this generation likes hearing that. They want to hear the truth. They don't necessarily want to be entertained just to be distracted. Also, we've got Emma Kenney on the show from Shameless. She plays Darlene's oldest daughter. And so she has her own crazy following.
Oh, my God. Darlene has a daughter. Oh, my God.
A daughter and a son.
A 17-year-old daughter.
Wow. Oh, my God. I'm
And we were very careful in the first few episodes. We kind of restate the situation so that people can get, if you haven't watched a show before, you'll definitely understand what's going on. It's also, it's a family show. It's a family dynamic. That's always kind of a given. But we let everybody in. And I'm sure there's going to be a contingent of young people who like that we're tackling stuff that nobody wants to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
It's also helpful because there's been like a lot of crappy sitcoms since our show went off the air.
Right.
So we have that going for us.
What you really mean.
Sitcoms went away. It was just reality shows and sitcoms weren't funny. So there are a few, but I'm very anxious to get you guys back. There is a website, abc.go.com/shows/Roseanne. You can just Google it and find the website. It's ABC. Also on Twitter for Roseanne, at Roseanne on ABC, and this all debuts ABC this coming Tuesday, March 27th at 7 Central. I cannot wait. And you guys have a great time tonight. Tickets for this Chicago Film Festival are available, correct? You don't know anything?
I think they're only $10.
The fun's going to be we're going to introduce them and we're going to talk about the show so people can ask questions about the episodes as we go through it.
Let me throw the website out there in case you're interested. Go tonight, ChicagoFilmFestival.com. That's ChicagoFilmFestival.com. Such a pleasure to meet you both. Congratulations.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you guys so much. Go Cubbies.
Yes.
No,
yes.
I like the Sox. Can't we just say go Chicago?
My dad went to Marshall
High School. I'm a Sox fan. We have arguments about this all the time. So, but I loved, I mean, Louis Aparicio was my guy. I loved Ernie Banks too, but
now.
I'd never hear the
end. And you call yourself a Chicagoan.
We're going to fight.
At least he's good here. She knows how to get the last word in, doesn't she? Great job.
Thanks, guys. Great to meet you both.
Roseanne.
News is next. Then more show.
That's good,
Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Kim. Bill and Wendy.
You're welcome.
That's Ryan Burrow.
What?
You're welcome. Go Louisville.
Yes.
For some reason.
It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We just got to meet one of the cast members of Roseanne, which is coming back to ABC, and the executive producer, Bruce Helford, and Lisa Goranson were in studio with us. Very nice people.
We did not mention DJ.
Michael Fishman.
Which I know his name, too, which kills me.
DJ.
I feel like I'm you when it involves that show.
Oh, yeah. You know your stuff.
It was one of the funniest sitcoms on TV at the time.
And wouldn't you say whoever cast the three kids, a lot of times what happens when they cast kids is they're adorable when they're 5 and 6, and then as they get older, not only are they not as adorable, but their acting isn't great. But for some reason, whoever cast those three actors on Roseanne did a really good job. They got better and better as the show went on.
They did.
It doesn't happen very often.
No, they didn't have to. They did bring in a baby, though, didn't they?
Yeah, that's the Jerry. They were referencing Jerry Garcia. They named the baby Jerry Garcia.
Till they said that.
But I don't know if that kid is going to be in the new show or not. I don't know.
And plus, DJ and Darlene looked a lot like them.
Yes.
They did.
Yes, they did.
Becky, not so much.
Yeah, but there's always a kid who doesn't look like somebody in the family.
That's true. But DJ and Darlene really did.
They look like they could have been their children.
Exactly.
All the original cast members are being welcomed back. They even found a funny way to incorporate Sarah Chalk.
The second Becky.
Who replaced Lisey with Becky Connor.
Yeah. She went on to...
she did right on Scrubs.
Yeah.
She did very well.
And Johnny Galecki did okay.
And he is even going to be back.
He's coming back.
That kills me.
That says a lot because he's got the number one sitcom on TV. And a lot of times an actor would go, nah, you know what?
I've Roseanne.
But yeah, he wants
in. These guys all grew up together. I guess she was saying off the air how when they first were reunited, it was like no time had gone.
Right.
It had lapsed. It's like they just kind of picked up where they were before.
It's like Ryan in Boys to Men. When you guys first got back together, Ryan, wasn't it? It's like no time passes, right?
Yeah.
And we mentioned Glenn Quinn, who played Becky's boyfriend and then turned into her husband. He was, first of all, he was very easy on the eyes.
Yeah.
He was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I was shocked to find that he had such a really thick Irish accent in real life. Like, you know, when you watch Walking Dead and you see them on an interview or you watch Talking Dead and it's like, wait, Rick Grimes has a British accent?
Almost everyone on Walking Dead is British.
And
you wouldn't know.
It doesn't register. He was from Ireland and had this really thick brogue.
Yeah.
And I knew he died. I couldn't remember how. He passed away in 2002 at the age of 32. I didn't know he was that old. Didn't he look way younger?
Yeah, he did. Now, remind me of this, because even though I watch the show every week, I can't remember how this played out. Roseanne's mother and grandmother were on the show sometimes. It was Shelley Winters and Estelle Parsons. But because those two actresses are almost the same age, or we're almost the same age. Shelley Winters is no longer with us. I can't remember who was her mom and who was her grandmother. In my head, they were... I honestly can't remember. I know one was the mother of the other one.
Her mom, I thought, was Estelle Parsons.
And then Shelley Winters was a grandmother.
Grandmother.
That sounds right. I think that's right. But those two women were only a couple years apart.
It's so acting.
I guess it is, yeah.
I truly enjoyed that show. Glenn became such a great part of the show, and there's some kind of tribute to him in this new one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give anything away, although it's been posted.
Tell us how it ends.
It's all a dream.
Don't give anything.
It's just a dream. Dan, roll over. You're snoring and stuff.
Don't give anything away, but say exactly how it ends. But don't give anything away.
All right. First of all, I know my Roseanne is really not that good.
No, it is good.
But it's way worse with them in the studio. I couldn't do it. I felt like I was...
Well, yeah, it's
I was under pressure.
But they enjoyed it very much. And you know what? To your credit, I know people are listening on the radio, so they can't see what I'm seeing. And some of you are probably thankful of that, but your face becomes Roseanne's face. You really transform. You're like a chameleon. It's amazing.
I don't know what you're saying.
It's amazing.
And stuff. The Dublin-born Glenn Quinn was found dead from a possible drug overdose at a friend's home in Los Angeles.
That was almost right after the show ended, right? Like a year after, 2 years after?
Yeah, he joined the cast of Roseanne in its third season, playing Becky Connor's not-so-bright-yet-sincere boyfriend and then husband Mark. He played from 1990 to 1997, and then 2002 was when he passed away.
A couple years after.
Wow. That's just sad. He was also he also co-starred as the half-demon Doyle on Angel, a spinoff of Buffy. I forgot about that.
Hmm.
So that's what he was working on during the 1999 premiere season.
What Chicagoan and friend of yours and mine made his or her network debut on a episode of Roseanne?
Friend of ours?
Yep. A friend of yours and a friend of mine made their network debut. They were on local television, but their network debut on an episode of Roseanne.
How do I not know this?
Mm.
What do I win if I get it
Jazz,
right?
Do we have any prizes for Wendy if she wins?
Can I get my weather station, my desktop indoor weather station from American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men? I still haven't gotten mine.
That is way too good of a prize.
We do have one to give away to the listener.
Yeah.
Can they guess?
Yeah. Do you want to do that? I'm all right with that.
How would anybody know?
Yeah, because you don't know. I'm surprised you're not aware of this.
It's a
friend of ours, someone who has appeared on the show. I don't want to say if it's a man or a woman, because that's nobody's business. But they made their... That's not a clue at all. No, that is not a clue. But they made their network debut on an episode of Roseanne.
How do I not know this?
I don't know. I don't know.
Are they around? Can we track them down? Now is all the Roseanne hype.
Right.
All right, let me ask this question.
Go ahead.
I will question your question with a question.
I'm ready for that.
Go on. Would you want to have this person on? Because that will help me determine who this is.
Yeah. It'd be fun to talk to them, yeah.
All right, you're lying.
It's legit.
Okay. All right, we have American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Have these really cool desktop indoor weather stations that I don't even know where the one in the studio is, but I want my own, and you can have one, too, if you know the answer to this.
The only clue I will give... Well, let's take a break, and then we'll take some guesses. Right. And I think I already gave the clue, but if I didn't, I'll give it again.
All right, this is right? Exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Can you read this first?
Nope. I'm overtaxed.
All right. Roseanne debuts on ABC. I guess it's the Roseanne revival, the new revival debut premieres, whatever. Sorry.
You just talked me out of it. I wanted to watch it. Now I'm out.
It's Tuesday. This coming Tuesday, 7 p.m. ABC. I cannot wait.
Same cast, new stories. That's what it says in the promos for it.
Which is kind of okay because I kind of forgot how it ended. I watched every episode. I went till the end, but I kind of fizzled towards...
It was an interesting ending. Roseanne revealed that she's a writer and that many of the storylines that we had been watching were all in her imagination.
That's right.
But now they're rescinding some of that.
Very Bobby Ewing.
Very Bobby Ewing. All right. So here's the question
I liked
asked.
Dallas and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, Dallas and stuff was great. That was the name of the show, Dallas and stuff. All right. So a friend of ours, a friend of yours, Wendy, a friend of mine, a great Chicagoan. Maybe it's a male, maybe it's a female. I'm not saying yet. I'm just saying it's a Chicagoan. Made their network acting debut on an episode of Roseanne.
Just one appearance.
One appearance.
We have a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. I want that.
Call in.
All right. I will. But I don't know who it is. Drew, do you know who it is?
I'm going to throw out a guess that it might be Tom Skilling.
Tom Skilling.
Oh.
Well, there's a cold front moving in through the Connor house. It's not Tom Skilling. No, no, no.
My word.
I don't think he was ever on Roseanne. I don't think.
That's a nice try, though, Drew. I wish maybe he'll be on the revival.
Fingers crossed.
Thanks, Drew. All right. One of our friends was on an episode of Roseanne.
Yeah.
And Jennifer, any guesses?
So this person was only on once on the show?
Yep.
Oh, was it? No, I was going to say either Sandra Bernhardt, but she's been on more than once.
We have had Sandra Bernhardt on with us, and that is one of the qualifiers. I said they've been a guest on our show in the past.
You said they were our friend.
They are our friend.
Closer to us than Sandra Bernhardt is
yes.
to us? Okay.
Yes. Yes. So was that your guess, Jennifer, or was there a different guess?
I had one more. So whoever Leonard is on Big Bang Theory, he was one of the younger girl's boyfriend, I think.
Johnny Galecki. Johnny Galecki.
Yeah, but he's not
our friend. He's no friend to us.
Well, we'd like him, but he won't have us.
Not quite. We've applied for friendship. He has denied those friendship requests.
All right. Those are my choices.
All right.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Nice try, Jennifer.
I love these questions that no one knows the answer to.
Yeah, those are the best kind, aren't they?
In fact, Bill, before you put your guess out there, yeah. Bill Leff had to go online and check that his question was right.
I wanted to make 100% sure, and I am. Now I was like 90% sure. Now I'm 100% sure that this is accurate.
All right, listener Bill, do you have a guest?
Yes, Jeff Garland.
Jeff Ooh. Garland is our friend.
Yeah.
He's your friend. He's a friend of the show. He's a friend to the world.
Although he's so tough to book.
He's very hard to book, despite our friendship.
Was he on Roseanne?
Yes.
That's the right answer?
Yes. Jeff Garland, back in 1989, played the role of Fred on an episode called RoboCop. That was his network television debut. Jeff Garland is the correct answer. Bill, how did you know that? That was amazing.
IMDb.
Oh.
Oh. Although
I had to look it up. I had to look it up.
Does it say Bill and Wendy's friend, Jeff Garland?
Yes. Yeah, there's a special section on IMDb for our friends.
He did work, but he had to then figure out who was a friend of ours. So you still win. We're going to set you up with a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers.
Congratulations, Bill.
Thanks.
All right.
You seem disappointed that someone knew. I should have guessed that.
I like when people don't use... it's a free country. If you're going to use IMDb, I can't tell you not to, but I always appreciate it when somebody wins these just from knowing dumb stuff as opposed to looking up dumb stuff. If you're on Jeopardy, you couldn't... if Alex Trebek asked you a question, you couldn't go, hold on, and Google something.
Or
and
let me pull out my phone. I'm getting a text from my son. I need to check.
This is important.
Yeah. I was going to guess Vince Moranto because he is a Chicago comic who is still out there working. That would have been my guess.
And
but
Vince is the inspiration for a character on network television.
From Mike and Molly.
Yeah, there's a character named Vince Moranto because the writers fans of Vince's. And they said, we need a name that sounds Italian. How about Vince Moranto? And then thus a character was born.
My friend Carla Felicia wrote for that show. And I am really pissed that she didn't put a Wendy Snyder in there.
That's very upsetting.
But Vince Moranto is perfect.
Right.
That is a perfect... You know,
Vince tells the story. His dad is also named Vince Moranto, and all of a sudden, he was getting a lot of street cred because he'd go
really?
Places with his own name, and people are like, oh, like the guy on TV. So, yeah.
It was really funny, and I know if you ever write a sitcom, I know who your name is going to be for a character.
Oh, you're getting a name. You're getting a character name, without a doubt.
No. You won't use me. You're going to use Jimmy Katsifaris.
Yeah, your brother-in-law, Jimmy Katsifaris, is going to be...
He's
getting a mention.
That screams Chicago to you, and I know you.
You know they say my name in Major League, right?
Yes, I do.
Because the writer David Ward thought that was funny. He did it as an inside joke to me, so he named one of the baseball players Billy Leff.
That's awesome, though.
It is. When my parents went to see the movie, that's all that impressed them.
Not
the fact
acting?
That I was... No.
You were so good and so cute and so funny.
But they called, and they're like, they say your name in the movie. And I go, I'm in the movie. And they go, yeah. They were so impressed that my name was in the movie.
Gives up a double single to Billy Leff.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
You're no Jimmy Katsifaris.
No. I don't pretend to be. No. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Steve has. Oh, Wendy and I are headed to the stream. If you just can't get enough of us, join us on the stream. It's all kinds of fun. Go to WGNradio.com. They'll tell you how to do it. Or stick around and listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve. That's just moments away. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.